For Cybercrime Radio, I'm Heather Engel. This is Cybertide, a cybercrime magazine podcast series brought to you by Adlumin. Working to revolutionize the way organizations secure sensitive data, Adlumin finds the newest cracks being exploited and shines a light on correcting the issue in real time with expert guidance. To learn more about our sponsor, visit adlumin.com. That's ADLUMIN.com. Joining me today is Mark Sangster. Mark is the Vice President and Chief of Strategy at Adlumin. Mark, welcome to the podcast.
It's my pleasure. It's great to be working again together, Heather.
So in this podcast, we dive into the latest updates and advancements in cybersecurity frameworks and best practices. And today we're focusing on the recently released version 2.0 of the widely adopted NIST cybersecurity framework, also known as the CSF. So Mark, what can you tell us about the NIST cybersecurity framework? What is it? Where did it come from? And most importantly, who should be using it?
Well, the framework itself was established by, of course, the National Institute of Standards and Technology. And they did this, back in the early 2000s. And it was the first, big framework that tried to encapsulate all the different factors in cybersecurity and protecting an organization and to build those across a kind of, if you almost think about it, like a life cycle of an attack. So things like identifying what the threats might be, protecting the organization, being able to detect suspicious activity and so on, be able to respond to that, and then ultimately be able to recover. Now, 2 years ago, they started the 2.0 framework. They finally ratified and published in late February of 2024. And I think some of the big things that we see now in this framework and why I think it's so useful for organizations is that they've added some additional features like govern as an example. And that's one of the things that probably people like you and me, we've been preaching. So it's important to see that. And some of the language I think has also changed around things like, I would call them sort of task-based inventory up into now it's about maintaining and managing. And I think that's also an important nuance.
Right. And we talk a lot about continuous monitoring in our industry. Mm-hmm. Does version 2.0 give us more information and more guidance on continuous monitoring?
It does. It's still, I would call it more aspirational to some degree. And the reason I say that is there's sort of prescriptive and aspirational. Think of it like a continuum, right? So the aspirational is you have to be able to complete some kind of task or control, whereas prescriptive is you have to deploy endpoint and you have to be monitoring it 24/7. But certainly they are calling for that kind of control where you have to be able to collect information in very generalized terms, be able to sift through that information to identify suspicious activity and then take action upon it. So this is really where the industry is driving. And it's not actually that this is something new. I think really what we're talking about is it moving down through different levels or tiers of business in various public organizations. So large groups, the government, defense, large contractors, big banking, and so on. They've all been kind of doing this for decades. This is more now sort of pushing this back down to smaller business. And in fact, that's one of the great things too, I think in 2.0 that they've added is some of the toolkits, right? Where they have sort of a quick start guide or reference guides. And one of them is for small business, right? And so they recognize they can't tackle everything. So it's more of a, if you're only going to do a few things, this is what matters. But certainly 24/7 monitoring is becoming a priority. And frankly, for small business, I think the rationale as an excuse was always that it's expensive, it's prohibitive in terms of resourcing and time. And I think at a certain period, 5-10 years ago, that was true. Nowadays, I don't think it is as much.
So one thing that we know is that most industries, and you mentioned banking and you mentioned a couple others, they have specific regulatory requirements already. Is there a reason that an organization might choose to implement multiple frameworks? And are there any industries, specifically you mentioned small businesses, that the cybersecurity framework is a particularly good fit?
It's interesting you say that, right? I think this is one of the other challenges that companies face, particularly those larger ones, or the ones that participate in industries that are highly regulated, right? Banking, healthcare, et cetera. And they kind of have to harmonize all these, right? So they might say, look, we want to go for NIST or potentially just depending on the nature of the business, the size of business, maybe they're going for ISO 27K, but at the same time, they'll also have other specific regulators. That is a challenge, right? You know, in banking, we have FFIEC. For credit unions, we have NCUA. There's the SEC, the Department of Financial Services in New York, and so on, right? We've got this litany of alphabet soup in which many organizations could easily drown. And that's a struggle for them to some degree. Now, for smaller businesses, often what I do is I'll look at one of those financial regulations, the DFS, Department of Financial Services in New York, years ago now, and they've updated it, published their cybersecurity rules and regulations. And those are actually pretty good. Because they have about 20-25 controls in them that aren't over the top. And so often I'll use that with a small business to say, take a look at this. This is only asking you to think about what threats do you face? What are the likely risk scenarios? Who's in charge of security? what are you going to do about some of the fundamental things? Like, how do you deal with remote access? How do you deal with patching vulnerabilities? How do you deal with supply chain? And of course, supply chain is another big piece that we've seen in 2.0, where they've broken that out. And you now have an entire section, the, what's it, CSCRM, right? We always love our acronyms and security. But if I go back to some of those smaller frameworks, I think those are a really great stepping stone. And as I said, for NIST, what I like what they've done in 2.0 with these getting started guides is there is a small one for business. And it's kind of broken out with some simple questions in each major category, whether it's identify or detect or recover. And I think it's almost rhetorical. It's almost like, ask yourself, if this were to occur, how would you get your business up and running again, say if you had been shut down with ransomware? So it's almost more of a thought exercise to get these groups to go, yeah, you're right. If that happened, what would we do? And then you hope that kind of rolls downhill, right? That goes to from the CEO to the whoever the technical security lead is. And that's their opportunity for conversation. And that's what I kind of like about this. And I always, as Churchill said way back in the day, never let a good crisis go to waste. I think that was post-World War II. Same idea here, right? Whenever there's some kind of tectonic change, it's just sort of another milestone that you can use to open that dialogue and engage with the non-technical leadership.
I think you make a really great point. We have to be able to ask ourselves these questions about the actual risk. For a while, it felt like we were so focused on the framework and checking the boxes and getting everything implemented exactly the way the framework said that we forgot to look at it in the context of risk. And I think it's great to see the industry starting to shift back into asking those rhetorical questions, like what would happen if X and how do we deal with it?
Agreed. And I think the way I'd put this is it's a bit like we forgot what the spirit of the law is about, and we've worried too much about the letter of the law. Now, that said, probably a lot of that has come from regulatory pressures. So our behaviors, of course, are going to be carved out and shaped by whatever forces impact us. So effectively, if that regulator is coming along and saying, well, you know, from the spirit of the law, we're doing the right things, but you're right, I couldn't check this box and I'm going to get penalized for it. I'm going to check the box regardless of whether or not that's good for the organization. So I think there's two things there. One is remember it's about the spirit and let's have more of an open mind about it. But I think the second thing is also to recognize that companies are doing this because of the fact that they're trying to avoid penalties. And that's not what you want them to do as a risk factor. Yes, one of the risks to the business will be financial losses based on settlements or penalties from a regulator, but that shouldn't be the driving one. The driving one should be, I want to protect my business. I don't want my operation to go down because I'm serving patients in a small town. I'm going to affect my stakeholders, my investors, and my clients or my customers. That's what should matter, right? And I think somehow when it comes to this stuff, we lose it. And there's a model I use in cybersecurity that actually came from healthcare called COMB, C-O-M-B. You provide capability, opportunity, and motivation, the proper motivation, and that leads to behavioral change. And that was actually developed in trauma centers, emergency rooms, where they were seeing impacts on patient outcomes because of time rush, right? It's crazy. It's frenetic. Doctors don't have the right time or enough time to make these critical decisions. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. So they were trying to find ways of making them sort of slow down, think about it, get the right information before taking the next step. And that's the model they came up with because before that, it was sort of a punishment-based model. If you screwed up, you went in front of a party of your peers and they told you all the things you did wrong. That's not going to make anybody feel good or help motivate them to do the right thing. So I think it's a little bit of the same with regulators, right? Like, don't walk in with a big stick. You're there to protect that organization. That's your job, right? Is to make sure the industry is protected. Don't look at the industry players as sort of guilty parties who are trying to cheat the system.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsor.
Security teams are often stretched thin and are faced with increasing cyber threats like ransomware and data theft. Adlumin is the security operations platform that simplifies complexity and keeps organizations of all sizes secure. Its innovative technology and seamless integrations create a feature-rich platform that includes everything a sophisticated security team needs. Adlumin empowers organizations with the collaboration and transparency required to establish a mature defense. The platform capabilities include SIEM, threat hunting, incident response, penetration testing, vulnerability management, darknet exposure monitoring, compliance reporting support, and more. Join the conversation and explore how Adlumin can enhance your security program and decrease your workload so you can reclaim time. Visit adlumin.com.
And now back to the podcast.
So shifting gears a little bit, we talked a little about some of the newer controls in Framework 2.0. With any framework, all the controls are there for a reason to help us with managing our cyber risk. But what are some of the most important or critical controls that will have the most impact for a business who's just getting started with something like this or some kind of a framework?
One is to think about all of these controls, they didn't just make them up. right? They do have groups of experts who get together and kind of brainstorm and start pulling, you know, best practices from every corner of their industries. And then they do go through a large ratification period. There's an open period, like with NIST, for example, where it's published and everyone gets a chance to kind of chime in and agree, disagree, make recommendations and suggestions and so on. So first off, the controls are there for a good reason. They are the fruits of experience, which has probably been gained rather painfully. But when I think about it for any organization that's starting, it's like we always say, right? If you can't set an objective and you can't set a goal, you're never going to know where you're going. You're never going to know if you've reached it. You have no way to measure it and so on. So I think one of the biggest first controls is within that governing piece is to understand what are the risks that face your organization and think of them in terms of the business. Don't say, oh, or we're going to get hacked. Think of it as a business loss, as reputational damage, as operational disruption. And one of the exercises I do with organizations with this is when we think about any security paradigm, it's about confidentiality, integrity, and accessibility. And I think really that CIA triangle is going to vary across an organization. We're going to say to them, okay, which one matters most? So maybe for a hospital, it's accessibility, because at the end of the day, they need to get the patient records. Yes, if they get breached, well, that's a bad issue. That's going to kind of be like a business issue to the hospital, but it doesn't stop them from conducting their core operation, which is treating patients. In another case, like a law firm, confidentiality is the crux of the legal system and attorney-client privilege. So for them, confidentiality is going to be number one. So I like to get them to think in those terms. That's a big piece. And I think the other one too that I really want to tout here, it's the supply chain elements, the supply chain controls, because a lot of companies still don't have those things in place. Or if they do, effectively, you're just smiling at them and you're not really doing anything about it. It's a case of we write a contract. Yes, we pass it through security. But all too often, I still see that the business makes the decision on a new piece of technology. It is then thrown over the fence to IT, and the ink is already dry on the contract by the time the security group gets to look at it and go, well, hang on a second. You know, I think I'd have probably wanted some provisions in here. Things about notification, division of duty, if there was an event, what responsibilities do they have? And I think depending on the experience of the legal counsel as well, is to really understand whether or not the right indemnifications are in place. We're always going to ask them to carry some amount of insurance. Yeah, that's standard. But as we saw, for example, with MOVEit, the breaches that resulted from that attack was that a lot of the times their indemnification was something like 1 to 2 years, the value of the contract itself. Well, now we realize that's not enough, right? If you're a small business and that's $5,000, $10,000, okay, that's probably buying you a couple of servers to replace. But we're talking about orders of magnitude larger. So that's another one, is I think supply chain is another critical focus where companies really have to watch. Because at the end of the day, that's often where the attacks come from, right? And a lot of it is the ball dropping between the players, where the vendor thinks they have a certain set of obligations and the customer thinks they have a certain set of obligations. And unfortunately, there's not enough overlap in the Venn diagram.
So if someone listening has implemented previous versions of the framework, what's the easiest way to stay current? Do we have to start all over with 2.0? Can we migrate the previous work? How do we make this as easy as possible to get ourselves current?
I don't think it's a start over, right? I think the first thing to do is to go through and inventory the subtle differences and then determine what can easily migrate. And there's a lot of companies that are working in this area that will help, right? Focus on the compliance space and doing things like SOC 2 certification, ISO certification, et cetera. Who can help do that? So I really think at least 80% of your work is done. 20% of it really comes from, as I said, identifying what the deltas are here, what's moved, what's shifted. Even if you've covered it before, does it now meet the new test? So for example, when they talk about, let's say, something as simple as inventorying physical devices and inventorying applications and software. Well, now it's about managing and maintaining those. So it's more than just, yeah, I've got a list of all the OSs we work with. Now it's a, well, how do I track those? How do I make sure that they're up to date? What's my policy about updates and things like that? So there's probably some augmentation there, but I think it's less scary than a lot of organizations think. Like I said, I don't think you have to get the snow shovel and take all those reams of papers and shove them out the back door and start again with a blank slate. But at the same time, the other thing too, like I said, never let a good crisis go to waste. This is also an opportunity to dust them off and sort of say, well, when was the last time we did look at this stuff? I've seen a lot of this through insurance claims post-COVID, where organizations really hadn't updated any of their plans or their frameworks through COVID, or they made minor changes. And then you're realizing after the fact, it's like, it's a totally different world, right? Almost all your workforce moved to remote. Endpoint, VPNs, and so on became sort of the critical factor here, or the front line. And, you know, none of that's really documented. So, you know, this is another opportunity to force the update and to work with the leaders and kind of say, hey, they've updated this. We're probably not compliant anymore. One of our missions is to be compliant to NIST. So, you know, it's time we invest.
Well, Mark, this has been a really interesting conversation and a great overview of the cybersecurity framework and frameworks in general. Is there anything else you'd like to add before we close?
I think at the end of the day, no matter what framework you're talking about, there's kind of five broad things, right? One is understanding the assets you have. The second is understanding the risks and obligations that come with those. Third thing is putting your program in place. The fourth is being able to respond to an incident. And the fifth is reporting, or as I call it, proof. How are you going to prove that you're doing what you're supposed to? And in the event of a bad situation, like a material cyber incident or breach, how do you prove that, again, you took all the right steps and you mitigated that? And I think regardless of which framework you pick, take those five and pencil those out or put them on a whiteboard and start there.
That's what I was going to say. Those are some good takeaway bullet points for our listeners. Mark, thanks so much for talking with us.
Heather, it's always a pleasure.
For Cybercrime Radio, I'm Heather Engel. Cybertide is a cybercrime magazine podcast series brought to you by Adlumin. Working to revolutionize the way organizations secure sensitive data, Adlumin finds the newest cracks being exploited and shines a light on correcting the issue in real time with expert guidance. To learn more about our sponsor, visit adlumin.com. That's A-D-L-U-M-I-N.com.